Praise 100.9 and 92.7. Now presenting Community Voices with Ron Holland, only on Praise 100.9 and 92.7.
And a good morning to you. Welcome to Community Voices. I'm your host, Ron Holland. Well, we are in a new year in the world of politics. 2014 marked a shift in Congress, and as the year came to a close, President Obama's approval ratings saw an upswing, and his swagger has returned. With a new Congress set to govern, what does it portend for the American people? Well, my conservative friend Henry Hollingshead is back in the building, and he is here to help me ferret out some of the political dynamics that will be at play in 2015. Henry, I miss you, man. How have you been doing?
Good, Ron. Good. Glad to be back and glad to show you the light of day, because the Republicans are coming. The evil empire is back.
Well, you know, it's just been an interesting year. I mean, you know, President Obama had taken some dips in the approval, his approval rating, and of course, there was a schlepping.
Yeah, that election was a schlepping. I know the Democrats love to say, well, if they didn't vote, they were going to vote for us, but it doesn't work that way.
Yeah.
You took it in that election.
Well, and interestingly, you know, I'm one of those folks that will suggest to anybody, look, we have some blame. There's blame to go around, whether it's the president, whether it's the Democratic Party as a whole. It was just an interesting midterm election. There was a sweep, obviously. The Republicans now have control of both sides of Congress. And so it's going to be an interesting year for President Obama.
I think President Obama really doesn't know how much trouble this is going to cause.
No, seriously.
I really don't think so. He said, well, I'm going to get out my veto pen and we're going to stop this thing. But what the Republicans have been able to do is by removing Harry Reid, things now are going to be moving through the Congress. And they're going to show up on President Obama's desk. Mm-hmm. Whether he signs them or not is not going to be the big play. The big play is going to be that he has to make a decision. And that is going to be the difference between what's happened in the last 2 years and the next 2 years. And I think this is going to go very, very well for the Republican Party in this sense.
Well, interesting.
They're going to be making a decision.
That was exactly my point. They are now required to govern.
Yes.
No more obstruction. The American people are going to keep a keen eye on their actions at this point. And I'm excited primarily because now we can hold them responsible for any obstruction, for anything that doesn't move outside of what President Obama intends to do if he, you know, if he uses his veto pen. They are now having to actually govern in this country.
Well, the veto pen is obstruction. No, it is.
Well,
I mean, if everyone, example, the Keystone Pipeline. Now, I know you're against it, but 70% of the population is for it. Every single group has voted that it's okay. And yet we have this problem. We hold it up because a couple people, and it's going to have more than 60 votes when it goes through again, and President Obama is going to have to sign it. And this is going to be really one of the defining moments of who's running this operation.
Well, I think the American people want to make sure that the Keystone Pipeline is of interest to us. I mean, what is the economic benefit to the United States, particularly when we're in a climate now where gas prices have fallen, particularly where we're in a climate now where job creation is starting to really amp up. And I am really excited about that part of it. But I was interested to see that when you look at the numbers that the Republicans have been touting with regard to job creation with the Keystone Pipeline, it is not as vast as the Republicans have suggested that it would be. In fact, there will only be 35 permanent jobs if the Keystone Pipeline is to move forward.
I see where you're wrong on this thing. First off, the Keystone Pipeline should be put in for the simple fact that we have broken the cartel of oil, and now we can finish it. We can destroy Venezuela. We can destroy Russia. We can finally, from an economic term, we can really do it. If we put in that pipeline, we can really, really bring an end to the cartel on oil.
Well, here's an article that I read just the other day. When looked at as an average annual job, it works out to be about 3,900 jobs over 1 year of construction, or 1,950 jobs each year for 2 years. The report says that the project would provide jobs for about 35 permanent employees and 15 temporary contractors.
Okay, how many? Let me ask you this. One of these big oil ships that they send across the sea, mm-hmm. how many people does it take to run one of those?
I don't know. I don't have the numbers.
Because you're going to be filling one of those ships a day when you put that oil through. And if you tell me that all those people aren't making money off that oil well, if you tell me that across this world only 39 people are going to have jobs out of that
thing? But that's just the construction phase of the job. We're talking about long term. What would be
that's
the long term impact
that's
of this?
That's what I'm
and
talking.
And according to every analysis of all of this, after construction, and we're talking about probably a 2, 3, 4, 5 year construction opportunity. After that, they are suggesting that there are only going to be 35 permanent jobs created as a result of this. This is not Ron Holland. This is not the Democrats talking. This is analysis from the professionals in the field.
What the analysis and the professionals in the field are looking at is the number of jobs in America. What they are not taking into consideration is the number of jobs that will be produced around the world by the production and distribution of that oil. They are also not counting the number of people that are getting help and work on the Canadian border. A lot of people live in Canada and come back over to the United States. Mm-hmm. You're not counting any of those people whatsoever. This is an international thing. This is not a United States thing. And that's the difference. Around the world, this is going to be one of the most major pieces of growth that has ever been.
Well,
because economically speaking, it can really change the world picture.
Well, those are ancillary jobs that, according to this, would not have the long-term impact that Republicans are projecting, and I just found that to be quite interesting. One of the other things, now, we talked incessantly about Obamacare. That was
yes.
Certainly a thing that you and I
and it's
had
in about
very
4 months.
Well, here's the deal. You're talking about 15 million Americans who have signed up for Obamacare at the end of 2014. Yeah. And now an additional 9 million. So the sky is not falling as Republicans like to project. The impact of Obamacare is not detrimental at all to the economy as the Republicans had led the American people to believe.
It has cost this country everything. This is the most expensive, non-working program ever thought up in the history of man. We have spent billions and billions and billions. These states have set up these exchanges, hundreds of millions of dollars, and they just close them down. And the government says, don't worry about it. We're going to give you the money. They don't have the money to cover this thing.
By the end of open enrollment 2014, over 15 million folks who didn't have health insurance before the Affordable Care Act was signed into law in 2010 are now covered, bringing the total uninsured adults in the United States from 18% down to 13.4%. Open enrollment 2015, we are seeing even more enrollments that hint at a larger number of total enrollees and an even lower uninsured rate by the end of open enrollment 2015. So for all the scare tactics that we've seen, the bottom line is millions of Americans are now having the benefit of having health insurance.
Ron, the problem is, yes, it's good that all these people have health insurance, but who's paying for it? They're not paying for it themselves. The government is paying for it in subsidies.
You're wrong, Henry. The fact of the matter is the folks who are signing up are now required to pay premiums. Now, whether or not it's subsidized, that's a whole different argument.
The argument is that they are getting subsidies.
But not everyone who is signed up is getting subsidies. I'm suggesting to you is, Henry, that there are millions of Americans who previously did not have health insurance. They now have it, and they are required to contribute contribute to their own health benefits by paying premiums.
Ron, if you pay a third of your premium, a sixth of your premium, or even half of your premium, the government is paying the other half. All right? Mm-hmm. You agree with that?
Well, I understand.
Okay.
But not all 15 million now.
No,
there is a small, I think it was like 3%, where the government is actually subsidizing, and that's the very poor of the poor in this country.
The health care system in this country at the moment is a mess. I'm sorry. The cost is way out of line. The cost-benefit analysis for this program is completely out of whack. There is no balance to this thing. You're taking money out of Social Security. You're taking money
No, money is not coming out of Social Security.
And they're just dropping
it
in this thing.
Henry,
no,
you're wrong.
It is wrong.
Henry, you're wrong. There is no money, not a dime, coming out of Social Security to cover health care in this country. The bottom line is, Henry, that we now have upward of 24 million Americans who previously did not have health coverage. And what is so profound to me is the absolute obstruction coming from the Republicans, given the fact that you got people. Here's the deal that I think is more important than anything else. And it really boils down to something as simple as the average individual who did not have health coverage, when they went to the emergency room, it was costing the American people $1,500 per visit. Now that we have the Affordable Care Act, that cost was slashed in half. So the question on the table for me is, would we as a country prefer that every person pay $1,500 or having that cost cut in half? I think there's an economic benefit for that slash to occur so that people can be covered. And I think that is, for me, it's a moral question. Do we have individuals who cannot cover themselves, or do we at least help them be able to get that coverage? That's the moral question that we have to ask ourselves.
The moral question is, are we going to bankrupt this country on medicine? That's the moral question. Are we going to lose everything? Are we going to stay at 30 hours a week and starve everyone? Are we going to continuously keep on with this program of writing bills that we have to pass without even seeing what's in it, as Nancy Pelosi said? And now we've got the director, the guy who wrote the bill. He says the reason it was written that way is so people could not understand it, so it would be passed, so we could do anything we wanted to do. That's a fact. And when you do it that way, it's nothing but lie. This whole thing is based on lie. And the trouble is you're not helping these people. You could do it for a sixth of this cost, and this whole thing is completely and totally out of line. When you get the head of the company, the guy who wrote the bill, who says the reason it was written that way is so no one could read it, and then you get Pelosi, the head of the Congress, to get up and say, let's pass the bill and not read it and get away from the fog what's in it, and you're telling me that's straight?
I think that is a fallacious argument, Henry, given the fact that your argument ought not be against a government who is trying to work out a situation where we can cover the American people. Your argument should be against the private industry, the private insurance company, who year after year after year continue to raise premiums and lock people out of being able to support themselves via health care. That is where the argument should have been in the first place. And as a progressive, as a Democrat, I am one of those who support single payer. But since in the interim we cannot have single payer, I think the universal aspect of health care is certainly important, given the fact that there are so many American people who did not previously have health care. We're talking a situation now, Henry, where we were at 18.3%, cutting that down to 13.4%. So people are now covered.
So
they can walk. They can walk into the hospital if there is a need, and now they can whip out a card indicating that they are covered by insurance. And that, to me, is the moral question that nobody on the Republican side ever really dealt with. All we dealt with was political expediency, how we can vilify the president and make sure that we can get to the next election in terms of being able to vilify him and vilify the Affordable Care Act.
Well, we just had an election, and guess what? My view is the view of this country at the moment.
I don't think so, my friend.
My view of this country is you lied. It's a big lie. We can all keep our doctor. Everything is going to be fine.
Well,
we're all going to have a job. Everything's good. And it's not going to cost us anything. So we'll drop it to 30 hours, starve everybody, lie about the whole thing, and think, oh, this is just great. No, it's not great. This thing is a complete and total mess.
Well,
the sad part, really, mm-hmm. to me, is when President Clinton left the White House, they had the money to do this thing. That's when they had the money. And instead of doing that, Bush went off and just spent all the money.
Well,
and now we don't have the money and the lies on this thing.
Well,
no.
Well, let's transition from this. I do want to end this portion of the program indicating to you that the mess that was left to us is not from a government that is trying its best to figure out how we get people supported with regard to health care. The mess was left by the private insurance industry, who for year after year continue to raise premiums, locking out individuals and forcing the American people, whether they had a job or not, into a situation where they got themselves in debt, they lost their homes, and every impact after that because they did not have health care. Let's talk a little bit about the economy. There is, of course, an improving economy. And I want to read this because and this is from Forbes. This is by no means a liberal rag. and first of all, let me just read the headline. Obama outperforms Reagan on jobs, growth, and investing. I want to read this for us because I just found it fascinating, Henry. This is a conservative publication, by the way.
Wall Street Journal is.
Yeah. President Reagan has long been considered the best modern economic president. So we compared his performance dealing with the oil-induced recession of the 1980s with that of President Obama and his performance during this Great Recession. As this unemployment chart shows, President Obama's job creation kept unemployment from peaking at as high a level as President Reagan and promoted people into the workforce faster than President Reagan. President Obama has achieved a 6.1% unemployment rate in his sixth year, fully 1 year faster than President Reagan did at this point in his presidency. President Reagan was still struggling with a 7.1% unemployment, and he did not reach the mid-low 6% range for another full year. So, despite today's numbers, the Obama administration has still done considerably better at job creating and reducing unemployment than did the Reagan administration. We forecast unemployment will fall to around 5.4% by summer 2015, a rate President Reagan was unable to achieve during his two terms. Give me your response.
Well, it depends on how you count the numbers. It's very simple. First off, you're counting a part-time job as a full-time job, and Reagan didn't. You're counting 30 hours as a full-time job, and it was 40 hours when Reagan did it. You have also not said one word about the popularity of Ronald Reagan and the popularity of President Obama. Because if this was so good, if everything was working so well, how is it that you get smeared in the election? He's down to less than 40% popularity.
But Henry, But Henry, as you know, midterm elections, we always see a shift in Congress. That's just a fact. And since you brought up the popularity, improving views of the economy have helped hike President Obama's approval rating to a 20-month high, a new CNN ORC poll showed Tuesday. As markets climb to record levels at new news of an economy in overdrive. More Americans still disapprove of the job Obama is doing as president, but at 48%, Obama's approval rating is at its highest point in CNN's poll since May 2013. The gains were driven by newfound backing among women, independents, and millennials. So his approval rating is skyrocketing at this point.
Skyrocketing underwater. Okay? Skyrocketing. Let's get this
You don't
mind.
Give this man credit at all,
you go from 30 to 40. Dude, you still drowned. Okay? If you go from a 30% approval rating to a 40% approval rating, or even a 45% approval rating, as president, you should be at minimum 55.
Well, but listen, interestingly, at the close of 2014, he was getting his swagger back. And I understand your point. He should be at 50%. But, I mean, look at what is happening around the world. And you know what? While I'm at it, I have this chart here. And I want you to see this because this just demonstrates economic growth under Bush, which, of course, you can see the charts way underwater.
Sure.
And here you have 57 months of straight job growth under President Obama. Now, you might discount part-time jobs.
Right.
You might discount or discredit 30-hour work week.
When they started to change the rules and counting this thing.
But Henry, people are working. We were adding, and I have to say this, when President Obama took office, I've said this incessantly, we were losing 750,000 jobs per month for the first 6 months of his presidency. 750,000 per month for the first 6 months of his presidency. We lost 8 million jobs under George W. Bush. Where we are in 2014, we've gained all 8 million jobs back, albeit part-time jobs, number one. And number two, 57 straight months of job growth. Just in the last 5 months, we're talking about over the 200,000 mark. And let us not forget that when he took office, unemployment was hovering at 10%. We're now down to 5.6 or 5.4%. So that is marked improvement from where we were when he first came into office after that mess that George Bush left us.
Okay, here's the problems with your argument. Number one.
There's no problem with the argument.
Yes,
that's just
there
the
is,
fact.
Because, look.
Those are facts.
All right, let me ask you a question, Ron. Let me ask you a question. With this 30-hour work week, all right, compared to the 40-hour work week, how many jobs do you think that explains?
I don't understand your question.
Okay, in other words, when you get a job, and back when the Reagan administration, it was a 40-hour work week.
Sure, sure.
Now, you're planning on a 30-hour, so you're a third less, or 25% less. I'm saying how many more jobs are put together because of that? One. Two, how many people have fallen out of the marketplace that they are not counting now? The actual unemployment rate, if you counted people without full-time jobs, non-full-time jobs, your rate is around 14%.
Well, here's
it
the
hasn't
way.
Changed.
Okay,
the other thing
we
is,
only have
it,
2 minutes
okay,
left.
But in the minority community, you haven't improved at all.
Well, that's not true because those numbers have fallen. But I do want to suggest the weakness of your argument is this. President Obama inherited a bad situation, and we've turned it around. No ship turns around on a dime. And there is going to be marked improvement, as I've indicated from Forbes magazine, by 2015. And the point is, whether or not it's a full-time 40-hour work week or 30-hour work week, the bottom line, Henry, is that people are working. For me, that is more important than anybody not having or sleeping on the street. That to me is more important. We only have 1 minute left in the show. This thing goes fast. I want to suggest that the swagger has returned, and we have a litany of reason to suggest that President Obama has done a great job. And I think one of the interesting things that's going to derive from all of this is that the history books are going to indicate that, yes, he inherited a bad situation and he turned things around. Russia's economy is in the tank, proving that that the president's patience and not bluster wins the day. Our economy is doing much better than countries that chose austerity as a means to end economic crisis. And I want to go back to Russia. All of the bluster that we've seen from Putin and all of the criticism that the president took as a result of that, we're seeing that his argument wins the day.
And look at what we have lost to Russia. We've lost the Crimea. We've lost half of, I can't think of the country right now.
That's okay.
That they have taken over. I mean, Russia has done anything that they have wanted to do, and we have sat there and we have let them.
And now,
it is ridiculous.
Well, the bottom line is because President Obama is a thoughtful individual and not taken to the idea of being bluster and thumping his chest, we are now seeing Russia's economy tanking as a result of Putin's arrogance. And to me, that demonstrates why President Obama is becoming as well-loved as he is. Henry, we're out of time, my friend.
Boys.
We're reestablishing relationships with Cuba. Our economy is doing much better. Literally 200,000 jobs per month. But in the last year or so, I mean, Henry, you got to give the man credit. I don't get why Republicans can't get, with all the obstruction.
The guy can't get elected.
Well, first of all the things, all the obstruction that we've seen from the Republicans, the president is doing a lot better than anybody thought that he could do, given the kind of machinations we've seen from the Republican Party.
I honestly thought he could stay above water at 60% when he got elected.
Oh, boy.
I mean, this guy's dropped like a rock.
Well, Henry, look, I thank you so much for coming in this morning to talk about these very important issues. 2015 is going to be an interesting year.
Yes, it is.
Absolutely.
Yes, it is.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I'll wrap up the show. This is Community Voices with Ron Holland. We'll be back in a moment. And welcome back to Community Voices. I'm your host, Ron Holland. I want to again thank Henry Hollingshead for coming on to talk about the very important political issues that will emerge in 2015. If you have any comments on today's show, please send me an email, ronholland@radio-1.com or ronholland25@yahoo.com. I also invite you to visit my blog for some insightful and provocative commentary, www.ronhollands.blogspot.com. Thank you so much for tuning in to this week's Community Voices. I'm your host, Ron Holland. We'll talk with you next week.
Thank you for listening to Community Voices with Ron Holland. For more information, log on to PrayCharlotte.com.